Welcome to the official podcast of PHP Architect. Join us to listen to the latest news and tech talk from our conferences, the magazine, and wider PHP community.
Hey, John.
Hi, Eric. So listen, your wife listens to the show.
And your audio is messed up. But go ahead. It doesn't sound like you're on the right mic.
I mean, oh. Hey.
Are you?
Mentioned him in a earlier.
I didn't hear you.
No, I'm not on the right mic. How's that?
Now much better. There. Way better.
So listen, my wife listens to the show.
The Rodney Dangerfield of the PHP community. I love it.
That's right, man. We need to make one for the merch store.
That is hilarious. Great job.
She cares about me. She buys me nice things, like Rodney Dangerfield t-shirts. She actually bought me a much nicer one, but like it's so nice you don't even realize what it's saying. it's fancy words and stuff.
Right.
How's it going, John?
It's going great. What are people listening to?
We are, I hope they know what they're listening to, but this is the PHP podcast. And it's the end of December, January 29th. You know what that means?
That means it's the end of December.
I got John all sorts of twisted. Like I told him I was going to stop reading the intro and just like, just go freeform with it. And he just doesn't know what buttons to press anymore. He's just hitting buttons left and right. He doesn't know what I'm going to say.
At the same time, I also realize I haven't done the very final step of releasing the magazine. So I'm going to go do that live while you open the show.
Oh, we're going to get the magazine released live? I love that.
It's released. It just needs to be made live.
Oh, man. That's awesome. Let's get that on screen, shall we? Yeah. PHP Podcast. If this is your first time joining us, welcome. If you want to be part of the show, pop into the Discord channel and catch us over on discord.phparch.com, and you'll see the stream goes here on the right hand side here. Every now and then it'll show up. So this is what we're looking at.
Every now and then, yep. So I just got to go here, and then I got to hit this button right here, and technically it is live.
Boop. Look at that! Look how pretty. January issue out. Cool. Wanted PHP developers. Yeah. Wendell with continuing the newest Laravel employee and continuing his PHP in the Enterprise column. Real excited about that. Man, good stuff here, man. Good stuff indeed. So, what else we got to talk about? Want to thank our partners for this podcast, PHP Score, and I'm sure we have something to say about them, but I don't have it up. So we'll talk about them a little later, but thanks, PHP Score, for being a sponsor of ours, or a partner of ours. Jeez, even I'm seeing sponsor still.
Here, let me get that up there.
There we go. I'm making John work today, man.
It doesn't help that I'm doing two things at once, right? Now I got to bind everyone's accounts, make sure that people who have paid for the magazine get it in their account.
Naughty boy. You're buying their accounts.
Yep.
I can't even get my N8N working right now. It's not even letting people know we're live on the other social platforms. But
oh, man, what happened?
I don't know, man. I'm just having one of those days. You know, things go sideways. They all go sideways. Just how it works.
If you are currently listening to the podcast on anything other than YouTube, if you could head over to YouTube, give us a thumbs up and a subscribe, that would be great. If you're listening to us on the audio version, please head over to youtube.com/phparch and subscribe to the channel. Help us out a little bit. Would love it. Thank you.
We would appreciate it. Yeah. Did I tell you? Every now and then I read the comments because I have to go into the actual PHP Architect account to do certain things. And it tells you, hey, that community comments. I'm like, all right, let me check them out. This one guy's like, yeah, could you guys put some timestamps in it and just let us know when you're talking about PHP? I'm like, brother, that could be like shows go by without us. I mean, it's not very frequently, but yeah. Yeah, if you're looking for one of those stale shows where we talk about stale stuff, it's coming. It's just not every week.
All right. Last step. My favorite part. All right. I'm back. I can pay attention now.
No.
Hey, did you talk about the merch store at all?
I did not talk about the merch store. I guess I could. We need more merch.
Yeah. All right.
Store.phparch.com. Just head on over there and check it out.
So you said it's been one of those days. What's been going on? Whoops.
I probably shouldn't have said it on the show then. Just meetings, lots of meetings, lots of back and forth. Just lots of back and forth where stuff we can talk about, but just, yeah, I don't know what to tell you, man. I can't talk about it here. I will bitch here, but not this time. I did do some coding, though. Actually, I leaned heavily on Claude this week, or last week, actually. I leaned heavily on Claude. So I'm doing some proof of concept coding, which is my favorite type of coding because, you know, I just show them that it can work and then I don't have to worry about it. I can make somebody else code, you know, do the actual good code. And this is actually a very neat little service that they're looking to offer. It's kind of boring unless you're in the industry, but it's a lot of automation where they're trying to create an API endpoint that like pretty much anybody in this industry could utilize in conjunction with their product. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's just been fun. But I had they had a very request. I'm like, we can do it. I just have to remember how to do all that stuff. And so I reached out to Claude. I'm like, hey, I have this request. The client wants to be able to receive an image, wants to be able to like mark it where we know if that image ever changes. So, you know, like do a SHA hash on it or something. And then it wants to make a copy of that image. It wants to watermark it with their logo, and they want to put this UUID on it from the database. And obviously, doing the SHA-256, I'm like, I'm going to do that. But I couldn't remember how to manipulate images in PHP. It's been a while since I've done that. It turns out it's way easier than it used to be.
A little image magic.
No, it wasn't even, well, it might be image magic in the background, but like the thing I needed the most, because I wanted it to be a watermark. So I needed it to be transparent and just barely showing up. And that's the thing that was stressing me out. And there's like this image copy merge command in PHP, which has been there for like ever. And I just never do it. Yeah. But I said, okay, I need to prefix this because I talked to TJ about this and TJ validated me a little bit, but okay, let me finish the story. So I reach out, you know, I fire up Claude. I'm like, hey, I have this request. Let's focus on the image manipulation one, right? I'm like, and I need to be able to make a copy of the image, manipulate it, add a watermark and add a UUID from the database. And I told him, like, you know, give me some ideas on how to do this. Like, you know, what should I be thinking of? I wasn't telling it to do it. I just told it to, like, you know, give me a direction, right? And it came right back. Said, oh, yes, you know, we can do that, blah, blah, blah. And it, you know, it outlined everything. And I'm like, all right. And then I swear to God, at the very bottom, it said, this task should take between 8 and 10 hours for you to do. And I didn't think much about it at the time. And I did say, well, how long would it take you to do it? And it said, I want to say like 10 to 15 minutes. I'm like, fucker. So I go through, I'm like, well, why don't you go ahead and do it then? And, you know, we had to iterate through it a little bit and had to do a little cleanup. I mean, nothing, it was actually super impressive how much it got done, like the first pass, how much it got done right, the first pass. And then I was like really into the coding at that point. I'm coding. And then a couple of days pass. And the more I sat here and thought about it, I'm like, did Cloud Code just give me like a scope, like how much time it's going to take to do to accomplish it? Like, first thing, how does it know how well of a coder I am to even do that? And what's it basing it on? And so I reached out to TJ. I'm like, hey man, I'm like, I might be crazy, but I'm pretty sure Claude gave me like an estimate on how long it would take me to code something. He's like, well, I've seen that happen. He's like, I've had that happen to me before. He's like, but it's not something it's supposed to do. I'm like, all right. And so I went looking back through my log to try to find where I thought I saw it. Because now I'm thinking, like, I'm hallucinating that. Like, I was tired or something, and I didn't see it. So, you know, I've gone back. I started going back through the log trying to find it. I couldn't find it. So I asked Claude. I'm like, hey, Claude, do you remember when I asked you to do this task? And he's like, you know, he replies, you were trying to accomplish this, and this. I'm like, did you give me an estimate of how long it would take me to code that? And he's like, I forget the exact words, but he basically says, no, I don't do that. It's like, that's not my goal. I don't give you an estimate. You know, my goal is to stay on task. I'm like, I'm pretty sure you gave me an estimate. And then he says, well, sometimes I might do that, but I didn't do it. I'm like, what the hell's going on? I'm so confused right now. How do you know who I am? Like, I feel like somebody's messing with me, man.
Like Joe says, it's looking in your Git history.
Senior Git history. Yes. I mean, I got frustrated. Down the Claude path again. I got frustrated today because I needed to fix something in the PHP Tech website, and I made a fix in CodeRabbit, another partner of ours, said, hey, you shouldn't do it this way. This could be a cross-site scripting vulnerability. Put this prompt in your AI and it will fix it correctly. So I'm like, all right, I'll do that. So I put the prompt into Claude, and Claude's like, oh, I understand what you're saying. I see what you mean. Yeah, this is right. Let me fix it. Boom, 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 boom. And then it's broken again. I'm like, God damn it. How's this still broken? And the thing that I don't understand is it's not broken on JS Tech. I'm like, why is it broken over there and not broken here? Like, what did I do differently in these two code bases? Because that's when I was actually coding stuff. So, yeah, I don't know, man. And then John's like, I asked John to approve my PR. And I don't know, you were out to lunch or something. Mm-hmm. John sends me back, why'd you close it? I'm like, because I'm pissed and I'm grumpy. Leave me alone.
AI told me I'm dumb. Or AI broke my stuff. Told me I'm dumb and then broke my stuff. So I'm out of here.
How about you? How was your week?
Stressful because deadline of tomorrow to get some things done, and also the magazine needing to get out, and yada, yada, yada. But you brought up Claude. Have you ever hit the API limit? Have you ever been rate limited?
I don't think
so. One of our clients has an account for all the employees, and all of a sudden they start getting rate limited today, saying you'll regain access on February 1st. And usually it's like, hey, we're out of funds, go top it off. So they went and tried to top off the funds, and it still doesn't work. Did you realize there's a $5,000 per month limit on Claude?
You guys, are they hit that? They hit $5,000? Holy smokes. No, I didn't know that.
So I'm assuming you can, you know, sign a contract with them and they'll increase it. But
I'm sure.
In general, it's like, we're willing to trust you up to 5,000, but above that, we're going to say no. unless we know who you are, right? We're not just going to take a credit card because maybe you'll charge it back or whatever. We don't trust you. But the crux of it is, over the holidays, the owner of the company reached out to his son, who works at the company, and started talking about AI and this Claude code specifically, or AI generated code. He then proceeded to take the rest of the holiday break and build an application, basically the same thing as what we've been building for a month.
Son of a bitch.
And I don't know. Of course, he doesn't know what the code looks like or any of that, but it's like, that's actually crazy.
Yeah.
So then for the past couple of weeks, he's taken a couple, like a developer and a QA person, and brought them over to his code base to say, hey, let's really focus on this. So it's all vibe code. It is just very like,
yeah,
I need this, build it, and let's make it happen. And then the goal now is, they're going to build this product. We're going to continue building the product we're building, and then take the best of both worlds, right? Hey, this works better in here. Let's bring it over here. Or that works better here. Let's like merge them together. So it's very interesting and scary at the same time. I got to admit, I was taken aback when it was first said, and it's still like every time they talk about, oh, we're going to launch a free switch, like that was my baby. Like I took the time to make FreeSwitch work for the project we're on, and all of a sudden they have their own server doing their own thing, and it's like, but, right? Anyway, mm-hmm. So I don't, obviously it's his company, he can do what he wants, and it's interesting because another developer brought up that in big enterprises, sometimes they will have siloed teams. I think he said Nintendo specifically, will have two teams siloed working on the same thing for a given amount of time, and they're not allowed to communicate with each other about what they are doing. And then at the end of whatever period it is, they come together and do the same thing. Like, let's see what you did and what I did, and merge the best of the best from both things. Because, you know, each team is going to get something right that the other one didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like an interesting approach. The whole vibe coded thing is the hard part,
right? But but see, here's where I struggle with that. Like the Nintendo approach, I feel is different, right? If you have two teams of developers doing something, mm-hmm. you know, that's fine. It'd be interesting to see how each team approaches certain problems. But when you have a non-developer just vibe coding, and it's great that it gets to work, but how maintainable is the code? How, you know, well structured is the code? What is it using best practices? Putting, like, I don't know. That's what I struggle with. And I've made it clear. Like, I think that's our new, you know, our new horizon as developers is we let these companies who don't know anything about development, you know, bring on some vibe coders who puke out code, get it working. And then when it starts breaking in about a year or two, and they need a real developer to come in and fix it, or at least a real developer who has enough understanding about developing and code and code patterns and things like that to come in here and work with AI. Because again, I still feel like AI is a very useful tool. I'm not looking to get rid of it anytime, but it needs to be used by the professionals who know how to use it.
I think if it's used in a proof of concept, like the whole point of a proof of concept is you build something and then you throw it away. You don't go to market with it.
Right.
That's my concern, is if they're building it and it's more of a let's learn from each other, but not use that code as it stands. That's mm-hmm. one thing. But I can also see it, especially when it's the owner of a company building something and it works enough for them that they see money at the end of the path, it's very tempting to say, this works, let me take it to market and sell it,
mm-hmm.
without doing that whole double check everything,
right? And just understanding, like, you know, the pitfalls of bad development and, you know, what you should be looking out for. Yeah man, that's interesting. Kind of along that same line, last week I talked about Cloud Code, the GUI, was using work trees to help you vibe code. And you can tell it not to, but the issue I was having is that it was using these work trees, and I'm using Herd. And so, like, whatever vibe coding it was doing, I couldn't check it in Herd. Basically, I would have to say, hey, work in the project sort of thing. But it had rekindled this, like, idea that I'd been wanting to work in work trees for a long time. If you don't know what Git work trees are, check it out. It's kind of like branches, but everything, instead of, I don't know how to explain it, you're not working one code base. Like, each branch becomes its own directory of the whole repo.
And you don't have to have them all checked out at the same time, but in general, right. you can have multiple branches checked out at the same time, and you just go into that directory, and now you're on that branch working that way.
And where it really seems beneficial is like what I do a lot, where I'm working on something, and then I have somebody reach out to me and says, hey, I'm looking to merge this PR into production. Can you look at it and test it? And then now I have to stop what I'm doing. I have to do a quick commit in my branch. I have to switch over. I have to create another branch to test their stuff. And it's not a huge pain, but it's enough of a pain where I've forgotten to do a commit. And then now I've switched over to another branch. I pulled their stuff in, and now my stuff is mixed with their stuff. And now I have to go through and cherry pick this. It's just, I hate when I do that. So this kind of takes care of that, right? When you create a new branch, you basically create a whole nother directory of code, and you work in that. And I've been thinking about how I could do that with Herd. And I talked about creating a script. So like when I wanted to do a work tree, I would call the script, and the script would create the work tree and, because my big thing is, you have to remember to do the composer install in the new directory. You have to do the npm install in the new directory. You have to do the npm build. You have to go through all the steps again. And the more I thought about it over the weekend, I'm like, man, I feel like I could do this. Like I could do it. I didn't even get to the weekend, to be honest with you. Marcus Moore in our Discord's like, hey, Michael Drinda just did this, right? I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? Michael Drinda, like almost that week, released something he calls Arbor. Let me get it shared here. Called Arbor, which is a very slick implementation. The reason I said this carries over from AI is because it's written in Go. In Michael Drinda is like, this is all vibe coded. Like he's like, I don't know Go. I vibe coded this whole thing, and it's very slick. I was actually pretty happy with it. I felt it was like 95% of the way there. It was doing a couple things I didn't like and didn't agree with, and I actually created a pull request, which he has now closed. You bastard! No, he didn't. Here it is. It's still open. Which I vibe coded as well, because I'm not that good with Go. But his implementation, and he's working on it for stuff he's doing. His implementation, the way he had it, was it would. You do a Arbor init and then the repo location, the Git location. It would pull the code down. That becomes your main branch, right? This is like a fresh pull. That becomes your main branch, and it copies over your .env.example file and then tries to run migrations with seeds, a seeder on it. And I was telling him, like, well, first thing, you're assuming, like the default .env example file is use SQLite now. That's Laravel's new, had this big push to SQLite for development, especially. I'm like, but you're assuming people are using SQLite, but like we update our example file with the stuff we're using, and depending on what it is, we use like MySQL and Redis and this and that. Like, so that is what's in our example file. But more importantly, we don't put credentials in our example file. So like the credentials aren't there for when it copied it over. So, I'm like, well, first off, I would rather it not just assume I want to run migrations. Much more importantly, I don't want to run migration fresh. Like it dumps existing database and reruns all the migrations and then Cedar. I'm like, I'd rather not do any of that. I'd rather have that be an option. And then when I'm working off a work tree, so you do Arbor work and then the name of the branch, and it creates the branch. And the cool thing about it does run the Composer install for you. It does run the NPM install for you. It links it to Herd. So it's Herd, you know, it's Herd Smart. It links it to Herd. So everything is like there. So I told him, I'm like, the other thing I like is I'd rather it copy my .env file from my main branch. Like if there's a main branch after I do my initial pull, copy that .env file because then I'll have all my credentials.
Mm-hmm.
And so I created a pull request that did all that. And I still have this fork, it's what I'm using. But
you're going to fix those conflicts now.
Well, so here's the thing. He's decided to go in another direction with it, which is probably this closed one. Nope. Okay. So I don't know if he has that code out there yet. He's decided to take this this config approach, which, again, I don't necessarily agree with. I still don't think, because that's still too much work. Like, I don't want to touch a file. You know, I just want to work with the files in my repo. Like, I don't want to touch additional files, which is why I thought his initial implementation was so eloquent. Like, it's just perfect. You know, it works with Git, works with my repo. I'm not adding anything to it. I'm not taking anything away. So I might just keep his fork, the fork I pulled and added my changes. I might just keep using that one because it kind of does what I want it to do. But yeah, it's out there.
It's interesting. Was there only the one pull request in there? One closed and one in yours that's open?
Yeah. I don't know if he's doing pull requests for his.
I was going to say, I think he's pushing direct to the main then because.
Yes, because this is somebody else as well.
Yeah, for you to have merge conflicts already.
Yeah. Yeah, he must be pushing directly to me. Matter of fact, 11 hours ago, 10 hours ago, 47 minutes ago. Yeah. Yeah, he must be doing it himself. So yeah, I mean, first thing, how weird is that? Like, I hardly ever hear people talk about working with work trees and web development. And I always struggled, like, trying to figure out how to implement it. And then, like, I decide I'm going to give it a go. And this Aussie swoops in and takes my glory.
Well, somebody in Discord, let me go give credit where credit's due. Jeffrey Davison shared Harris21 has their own repo and it's Laravel Herd work tree. I know nothing about it other than it, along the same lines. It's a Claude code skill that automates setting up Git work trees for Laravel projects served by Laravel Herd.
We need a link, brother. Give us a link. It's in
there.
Oh, it's this one.
Oh. Yeah, so it's the second one on the Trello board. It's also in Discord now.
Got it. This one right here.
Now it's not. It doesn't have the same eloquence as Arbor. I mean, the naming for Arbor is brilliant versus Laravel dash her dash work tree.
He actually put some creativity into his naming. Yeah.
He probably asked Claude, "What should I name this?" And Claude said, "Oh, let's go with Arbor."
Copies and updates .env file with correct URL session domains. Oh, that's cool. I'm wondering if this runs the Composer install. Oh, yep. Vite as front end NPM package manager. I would assume that's what it's saying. Oh, and it's just a plugin.
It's a plugin to Claude Code. Have you looked at any of the plugins for Claude Code?
Actually,
we should run our PHP Score ad, and then we could talk about plugins for Claude.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's hear from PHP Score. What did you say, PHP Score admin? What the hell is that?
What, though? PHP Score ad.
You said PHP Score
and then, admin. And then.
Oh, and then. Oh, okay. All right. Let's hear from PHP Score.
Thank you to our partners at phpscore.com. Every app builds up technical debt over time. It's the price we pay for shipping new features and moving fast. When we build up too much of it, though, it can start to impact how we work. team velocity suffers, bugs become more frequent and take longer to fix, and everyone starts to get a little frustrated. The key to managing debt is to measure it. A credit score can help you understand how well you're managing your financial debt, and now there's a credit score for your technical debt. Go to phpscore.com to get a free technical debt score and monitoring for all of your PHP applications today. Thank you,
PHP Score. Yeah. I just was looking at this as that was going on, and yeah, it does a lot of the very similar approach. The one thing I liked about Arbor is that the top level is the name of the project. So, like, if it was the phptech.io site, it would be phptech.io. And then inside of that are your branches or your work trees. So main is there initially, mm-hmm. and then any other ones you create are there. This one actually creates the work trees within the project. So you're duplicating the entire code base again within the code base you have. Not real thrilled about that idea, but this is pretty cool. I still am wondering, it assumes if you're running it scales it running as before running on command. Yeah, I'm still like not totally seeing where it says it runs Composer automatically, but I assume it does. Like, if that would be the point of something like this.
It says it up top under what it does, number 4. Installs dependencies.
Perfect. There we go. Yeah. Yeah, this is slick. Yeah.
But it's still not a separate app. It is built within Claude Code.
And it's Claude Code specific plugins. So you asked me if I've tried plugins. Yeah. I have tried a couple plugins. If you remember, you asked me why I switched to using the UI. And like I said, one of the reasons was at that time, Claude wasn't remembering session after session, where the UI was just one session. It was just a project. But the other reason was my Claude CLI started crashing. And I would even ask, I'm like, why do you keep crashing? He's like, I can't self-diagnose myself. What do you say? What are you asking me? but that was after I installed two plugins. One was like a dashboard. And then one was so that it would remember, it would have the memory session after session. There was a plugin for that. And I'm not sure which one was crashing it. I just it ended up taking both of them out and it was working again. So I stuck with it and kept using it. So I'm not opposed to trying this plugin, however. It's very easy to install and remove plugins. And there's no magic. It's just, it even tells you, I saw here somewhere, it tells you where it stores it, which is right here. This is where it stores it in your home directory. So this is where your plugins are. So I might have to give this one a try, quite honestly. I might need to get them.
Within Claude Code, did you know you can go into plan mode and auto accept edits and all that stuff?
Yeah. I have it, which I don't understand. Like, I tell it to auto accept edits, and then it still says, like, the first time it tries to do something that it hasn't done before, it'll ask me for permission to do it and ask me, can I always do this on this project? I'm like, I thought that's what auto accept edits were, but yes, do this. But yeah, I've done plan mode before. And again, I don't understand what the benefit of it is, because my example earlier, I wasn't in plan mode. I just told Claude, hey, I don't want you to do anything. I want to have a discussion around the best approach for this. So yeah, I'm not sure what the differences are. Maybe there are benefits. I just don't know what they are. I have it in auto accept edits because I've built up that much trust with Claude now and have enough of an understanding of how it works where I'm fine doing that. But like I'm not always telling Claude to do the coding either. I will have conversations to, you know, talk about implementations and the way to do things and stuff. I was like, just recently I said I'm working with license plates on this proof of concept. I'm working with license plates And I'm like, hey, I'm like, the more I think about it, I want a license plate to be a value object. So I want to be able to put a bunch of restrictions around what a license plate is. We're talking a US-based license plate and plates from Canada. Can you come up with a rule set to accommodate that and make license plate a value object so that when I'm working in the code, I always know that I have a valid license plate? Like, it might not be valid as in it's a real license plate. It could just be
right
correctly, but I know it's added correctly. It was cool because Claudco started responding right away. He goes, well, every state in the U.S. has different requirements. Do you want me to go state by state? And I'm like, no. I'm like, for now, just make a very, you know, generic format that, you know, can apply to everything. We might drill down more at another time. So yeah, I like using it for that sort of stuff because I don't want to try to figure out, you know, all the rules from license plates. It's like a pain in the ass. I love having Claude for that sort of stuff. All right, we'll have to give this one a try. Yeah,
I was talking about how my week's been a pain in the ass because we have this looming deadline coming up, and one of the things I was working on, I was blocking another developer, a front end developer, on, and it was frustrating. I'm like, because it was very well unit tested. I was adding two new links to a HAL API response. And we went through the requirements of what it needed to be. I added tests to say, you know, here's what the value should be. Everything should work. Release it. It actually gets pushed out and he then tries to use it. And it's like, I'm not getting the right stuff. And I'm like, what are you talking about? So we go and look, and sure as shit, he wasn't getting the right values. In the telephone calls, it's give me the next number I'm going to dial, and then the next contact I'm going to dial. Nice. I was just reading that. Sorry.
Duck Nizzle. Photos are not real. You're our male model. We need pictures.
So anyway, I thought the rules were very clear. My tests were passing. I got frustrated. He showed me. I'm like, I wonder if it's like between calls. Like at the beginning of a call, it's this way, but after you end it, it changes state. And sure enough, that's what it was. So I updated my test to say, okay, run these tests before hanging up, then pretend like you hang up on a call, and then run these tests and assertions afterwards. And sure enough, I found the issue, coded up a fix, pushed it out, good to go, right?
No. That's, I was going to say no.
Nope. He tested it again. He goes, it still doesn't work. I'm like, you got to be shitting me, right? So I go and I spend a lot of time on it. And turns out we had some BHAT tests as well that were actually making the API calls. I'm like, let me add to these tests as well, because I didn't even think about that before. And turns out it was a very edge case of the very first dial, the state you're in could be wrong. But I was able to work through all that. But it was just so frustrating because in the middle of it, I kept pushing my code up to GitHub and CI would run and just fail. And I'm like, wait, what's going on? All of these new microservices that we have a make file for. And there's a specific thing that says make CI. So it's supposed to run all the tests like CI does. And they were passing on my machine, but you get over to GitHub and it was failing. And I could see like Rector complaining. I'm like, that's weird. So I can run Rector locally, like make Rector, and it would change files. I push up and it fails again. I'm like, what the hell? Turns out Rector was adding casts, like a string in front of variables. Mm-hmm. But Rector did it with a space, and then PHPCS was like, there shouldn't be a space here. But I'm like, Rector put it there, not me. I was so confused. And then I finally asked in Slack, I'm like, what is going on here? And somebody said, run make pre-CI. I'm like, pre-CI? What the hell is that? And it turns out make CI is supposed to test things, but it doesn't change your code base.
Right.
Pre-CI will actually make changes to the file. So it'll run Rector, it'll run PHP CBF and some other things. And I was like, oh, that's so much nicer. Run that.
that wasn't why it was failing though, right? I mean, because it would work either way.
It would work, but because of the coding standards and like that, the one that,
oh, it was, you know, all on the standards. I see what you're saying. Coding standards.
The one that kept pissing me off was the space between the cast and the variable name.
And yeah. I'm
like, seriously? Like, no. Some of the others I can understand, but it's like, this is killing me. finally got it through, gave it to the front end developer, and it's working. So happy.
Nice. Yeah, we need coding standards in one of our larger code base. I mean, I think we kind of have them, but we really need to get better at it. It's so easy to forget about that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Have you looked through any of the RFCs lately? The PHP RFCs?
No, but before we get to that, can I do something else?
You most certainly may.
It's the end of January. You guys have days, literally days, before this early bird ends.
Not even
this
days.
It's the last time I'm going to tell you. Get in there and get your early bird. We had actually a pretty good day today, which was nice. I don't want to jinx it, but you know, we're happy with where we're at right now. But yeah, get in there because this goes bye-bye. It's not coming back.
Yep.
So
the cheapest the tickets will be this year, for sure.
Yes. For sure. All right. What were you about to say?
Well, do you want to talk about anything else on your list? Or do you want me to? I was going to talk about a few RFCs that are currently in the voting stage.
I actually don't have something on my list. Where did that go?
I don't know.
This guy here, I don't have on my list.
Well,
yeah, let's talk about RFCs and then we have time. We can BS about this other stuff. It's not PHP specific.
Most of these are going to go super fast. I mean, right. This first one is trim form feed. It's a no-brainer. It passed 100%. I'm sure everyone uses trim to trim off spaces off the end of a line, new lines and tabs. All they want to say is you should remove form feeds as well. I don't know how big of an issue that is, but for them, obviously, it is. So
I wouldn't have even thought about this.
Right. They're obviously working with some file they're getting from somewhere and it has that. So
yeah,
it's just a quality of life. The only problem is it's backwards breaking in the sense that if somebody's using it and they have form feeds and they don't want it trimmed, now it's going to be trimmed.
Yeah, I was about to say, yeah, exactly. You know, there's going to be that one guy on the mailing list, like, you guys broke all my code base.
Right. That's why I was surprised that it passed unanimously, like, because I can see it impacting very few people by not adding it in there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a quality of life thing because you can always add it into the list. I think it's the second parameter. You can say what you want trimmed, so you can trim anything. It's just if you don't pass anything in, this is what gets trimmed. So you're making the change to benefit a couple of people and potentially breaking code that's been around for years. And the chances of the developer that wrote that having moved on and now people are like, why is this broken? can you imagine?
Claude, fix this.
But it passed unanimously.
See, stuff like this, like, why can't I think of improvements like this to make? Like, this is probably wasn't a lot of work. Damn it. All right. What else you got?
It's weird. It's one of those things where you hit your head on that enough. Like, damn it, I got to trim this. But how often does that happen to you to make you say, maybe I should RFC this?
More importantly, how often does it happen? Like, normally I would say, you know, I'm going to create a class for this or a helper file for this. Yeah. You know, I don't know if I've ever said, you know, this should be in the internals of PHP.
Yep. Right. The next one that I brought over.
Is readable writable?
Reflection is great. I don't know how often you use it.
I don't.
I use it occasionally, not a ton, but PHP has progressed so much in the past few years in the way we handle our properties. So in the past, there was an is public method, but all that said was if it was public, which back then assumed it was readable and assumed it was writable.
Mm-hmm.
And we've made such advancements in our typing or our visibility over the past couple of years where now we have public-private set, right? So it's public where it's readable, but it's not writable.
Mm-hmm.
So just a simple addition to reflection to choose scope. So you can say, if you don't pass scope in, which is weird that it's the first parameter.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. they want you to pass null to say, is this globally accessible?
Oh, interesting.
And then mm-hmm. if you pass in a class in there, it's saying, is this accessible by this specific class? So okay. basically inheritance, if you are extending a class, you might have access to something, but you want it in the global sense.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Is this where's this at? Oh,
it's past.
Yeah.
25.3.
Okay. So 8.5 targeted for 8.5.
I think so.
Okay. Cool. Got one more here. I see.
Yeah. This last one is very interesting.
I don't understand the title.
So it's in other languages you have a let block. Or
yeah,
it's just a way to scope specifically variables.
Yeah.
So it's basically within this scope of let bracket, you can define variables, and then once you're outside of that scope, those variables go away.
Right.
The point of this is we often have temporary variables we'll use at the top of a function, but we don't need them later, or then mm-hmm. we reuse them later, and we didn't mean to reuse them, so that leads to bugs potentially, depending on what the variable was up top. You get later on in the function, all of a sudden that variable set and you didn't know that it was going to be. So they want to have a simple way of just saying, I know this is temporary, I don't want to use it later on. This one is not getting as much traction in the
voting.
Actually, looks
yeah.
like it's,
oh, wow. Yeah, it looks like he's failing so far.
Well, it's tied 13-13, yes, no, and then five people abstaining.
Well, but don't you need a supermajority?
Probably.
I think so.
Some of the people that...
It requires a two-thirds majority to accept. Yeah.
The people saying no. Some of our friends, we got Ramsey saying no, Krell saying no, Daniel Scherzer, the release manager for 8.4 or 8.5? 8.5
mm-hmm.
is a no.
Those Ramsey, why'd there. You say no? Ramsey's in our Discord. I just saw him. Yeah. See, this is where we've talked about in the past, right? Where I wish I could see the arguments of the people who say no, like what.
And you just got to be on the mailing list, right?
Right, right.
I want it to be.
Yeah, you have to go back through it. Yeah,
I want it to be a comment when you vote.
Yeah, or just even if I could click on like Ramsey's name and it take me to an email or something, you know, mm-hmm. it's like. I don't want to see this. This isn't what I want to see when I click on his name. I've already seen that face enough.
Derek abstained. He's like, I don't want to get involved with this nonsense.
That doesn't sound like Derek at all. Adding for each foo as let bar syntactic sugar for let for each. Yeah, I can't say I can't say I'm a fan.
I don't think I would use it, but you never know. It's like,
yeah,
chance that
it's one of those things. Like other languages have it; they must have it for a reason. But I know JavaScript has it, right? Like, there's a difference between let and variable. You said, it was it's a scope thing, right?
I think so.
Yeah,
those JavaScript guys,
they're weird.
None of them have signed up for JS Tech yet. Where are you at? Get your ticket to JS Tech.
Bastards. We really need to market that one more.
Chris, you don't need a vote on this one. It's not going to pass.
Yeah. Cool.
It's like, cool. How often have you gotten bit by a variable? Like, I understand it's very subtle bugs that get introduced. So it's one of those, you get bitten enough and you're like, damn, I wish I had a way to combat that. But then you got to think to combat it ahead of time.
Yeah, totally. All right. Let me get this last one out just because, well, part of it's because I just want to genuinely just bitch a little bit, I guess. And then, all right. So share this, come back over here. All right. First thing, what's the future of MySQL? Well, this has kind of been like a question for a while, ever since Oracle bought Sun, and everybody was very curious about you know, what was going to happen to MySQL. And to Oracle's credit, yeah, I think it's more of a image issue. Like, they realize if they totally killed MySQL, you know, the development world would probably come down pretty hard on them. So, info world, Laura especially, who are, like, what are you doing? Like, do you know what you're doing? Like, this article was like, okay, Postgres is like, you're thriving. And I agree. Like, I see Postgres all the time. And like I said, the Laravel world has gotten all uppity about SQLite now, which I think is a fad. But, you know, it's just talking about, like, you know, the fact that MySQL was purchased by Oracle and this and that. And more people seem to be moving to Postgres, which I wish I had more of a handle on, but, you know, I don't. But then down here somewhere, right here, it says the loss of many Oracle staffers has impacted the speed of MySQL development. Looking at the numbers, number of bug fixes released in each quarter update, the number of fixes, blah, blah, blah. And then she says, where'd she say? Oh, did I not highlight? Oh, here it is, down here. Will this act as a spur for a fork of MySQL that the community supports? Yeah, it's called MariaDB. Like, where the hell are you? Like, it won't create a fork. There is a fork. You know, when Oracle bought MySQL, that's the first thing the community did was create a fork. It's like, yeah, maybe this will you know, have the community create a fork similar to Postgres. Like, are you even in this industry? Like, do you know what you're writing about? I just had a bitch about that a little bit.
I'm going to say no. I don't know what they're talking about.
I don't even know what the purpose of this article is. I mean, it just kind of humdrums. I mean, I get what this was the only kind of, like, this is interesting. At first, I didn't know Oracle laid off a bunch of people. And yeah, I could see how that could impact MySQL. So yeah, this would be something to keep an eye on. But like, all this fluff, this is just like stuff that's like, you know, already known, already talked about. Like, okay, great. You know,
the funny thing is, reading that, my brain doesn't read very well sometimes. Go back to the highlighted part.
The big one.
Yeah.
Which one? Yeah.
Right there. So I'm reading that. It says the loss of many Oracle staffers has impacted the speed of MySQL. I'm like, how has it affected the speed of a database?
Your brain just stops. Like, first time it has a question after a word, it's like, that's it. I got a question right here. Yep.
I'm not a very good reader.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah. So yeah, it's whatever. I mean, I stopped being extremely nervous. The one thing I didn't realize, so I didn't highlight it, unfortunately. I should have, but I guess in comparison, MySQL community is quiet, although Oracle has been blah, blah, blah. So there, here, the enterprise version. So apparently, MySQL right here, for example, why MySQL heat wave boosts innovation like vector search, this part right here, I guess they have been developing MySQL Enterprise to kind of be more on pace with some of the cool things that Postgres does that somehow hasn't been finding its way back into the open source community version, which, again, I thought that was part of, well, I guess I don't know what the license is now that Oracle has it, and if it's Oracle's product, I guess they can do whatever they want. But I thought that was the whole thing, like, everything is supposed to find its way back into the community version. I didn't realize there was an actual difference between enterprise and community, and to the point where there's actually features in the enterprise version that are not in the community version. That is a little disappointing to read, but yeah. So that's it. That's all I had.
Live chatter in Discord as you were going over that. Sarah, is the sole vote no on the trim operation for the very reasons that we just talked about, where I was like, you are putting something into the language for a very small number of people, and it could have very major impacts on other people that don't even realize it's going to impact them.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure that can be said about a lot of these changes. And that's why, like, so what do you propose? Like, Sarah, would you feel better if this was part of a major release as opposed to a minor release? I mean, obviously we're in a delay, so I don't know if she'll get that in time, but.
For the number of people that will be impacted in a positive way, like, I don't see it being a big enough positive impact to the development community as a whole to make this change worth it.
When there's
already something within the construct that says, if you want to trim line feeds, just add it to this list.
Right. Yeah. That's I agree. I don't think like it's not something people have been bitching about for years. Like a bunch of, you know, people have been saying, when are we getting this?
Usually backward breaking changes, in my opinion, should be, it's going to benefit the community as a whole, or massive speed improvements, which benefits
the community
as a whole. Or
security improvement. Or not even improvement, security fix, really. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For something as small as a line feed that most people don't see in their text files. Well, they don't see it because it's a hidden character, but most people probably don't have in their files. Probably not worth it.
Yeah, I agree. All right. What do you think?
I don't know.
What do you got?
I want to check one more thing on the trim. One thing I would like to see on the trim is right now, if you want to add a character, you need to also include the other characters. It'd be nice if there was a flag, like, appends my character to the list. I want the standard six that are there plus my new one.
Oh, yeah.
Because as soon as you specify one, I think it automatically removes the others.
That would be weird, but yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. If that is the case, I do agree. Yeah.
Yep.
Yes, are low no matter how you slice it. Yeah, we kind of agree with you on that one, Sarah, I think. All right, are we good? Is that it for this month?
Duck Nizzle, Data Grip. I like Data Grip for
better
a database client.
Data Grip is paid. Well, if you
does
don't like
DB, Linux?
If you
it
don't like DB, yeah, it does. If you don't like DB Eaver, however you want to pronounce it, you're probably not going to like Data Grip because they're very close to the same thing. I mean, there used to be a open source version of Table Plus, but it was horrible. I forget what I was using. I think I was using Data Grip on my Linux machine. I feel like there was another GUI out there. I mean, if money is an object, yeah, Data Grip and Navicat is another. Navicat's actually, well, I haven't used Navicat in so long, but that was the first like database GUI I ever used, was Navicat. Squirrel SQL, Chris says, is the client he uses. If you're good with the command line, my CLI is fantastic. I think that's what it's called, right? We went through this once before. I always forget if it's MyCLI or MySQL. MySQL.
It's probably MyCLI.
No, yeah, it's MyCLI. So if you're okay with command line stuff, which, you know, I try to get better at, let me share this with you guys real fast. MyCLI, and they have this is just for MySQL, and then they have another version for Postgres, and they have a version for like Redis, a few other things. So this is great because it has the auto completion as you're typing. It will also auto complete tables and columns, so it, you know, it understands, like, once you say use database, whatever database you're using, it sees the tables and columns. So
it's basically the MySQL CLI tool that already does all that.
Right. It doesn't do the auto completion for you.
Yeah, it does.
Does MySQL do auto completion now?
Almost positive it does.
I mean, you might have to tap. Maybe if you tap, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't show you the drop down now.
Oh, now I'm curious though. Well, I'm not going to do it right now. I don't want to prove you right at this moment. I'll prove you. here's the Postgres one down here. I'm pretty sure there were like all these other ones. I don't see them on the list anymore, but.
Sarah asked me anything important came up on our podcast. Have you not been listening for years?
Important ever come up? Come on. You're cute. Look at you. Yeah, not that important. Yeah. So yeah. If you want to give DB Data Grip a shot, like I said, it's very similar to DB Beaver. So if you're looking for more of a GUI, you know, click thing, you're probably not gonna like it. But
I'm not gonna. A completely separate topic, real quick. I saw somebody, I'm not gonna call them out, recently post saying, "I've got a job, I'm comfortable in the U.S., but with the way everything's going right now, if there's anyone in Europe looking to hire and willing to relocate, I'm willing to jump ship."
It's like, I told you not to say that on the podcast, damn it.
I didn't say your name specifically.
No, see, I'm that idiot, man. I'm the guy. See, that's the thing, man. I'm the liberal with the gun, man. Like, I'm ready. I want to fight for my country. You know, I'm fine, like, fighting, you know, the bureaucracy, the authoritism, and I'm the person they don't want in this country. But I get people, like, you know, we've talked about it. Our kids aren't safe with this administration. And, you know, we've talked about, you know, what should we consider doing something like that. But no, I would be fine if I had the money, like letting them live somewhere else and staying behind and, you know, going all rebel. But yeah, I get it. I totally get it. I mean, you don't have to do it. You don't want to have to do this. This is a pain in the ass. This sucks. Like, I hate this timeline. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I need it. I need to get back on a timeline that just makes sense. And I assume, I know you don't stay real current with news, but I assume you saw there was another killing, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. We've talked with the kid about it. And
God damn.
Ridiculous. I heard on NPR today that we should end the podcast right now, but ICE has broken more federal injunctions than any other, like this year, than any other organization, like in total ever. It's just crazy.
Yeah it's tough.
Weird timeline, like you said.
Yeah.
Where's the reset button? Right. Would love to hit it.
Right. All right, that's it for this week. I'm calling it. John lingered on too long there. I'm cutting him off. So thanks everybody for hanging out with us. You bowling?
I'm supposed to bowl. It's gonna be a bad night because for some reason I got the idea on Tuesday. I'm like, I should go do a workout in my garage, and fired up.
You still feel fitness with it? Plus.
I did legs. My butt. And my legs are just absolutely killing me. I walk around all funny. It's going to be really hard to bowl.
Do you have I'm sure you have like your own bowling shoes, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, I got to show.
Yeah.
You got a little time?
Sure.
I'm going to give everybody a peek here. Hold on. Never mind. I guess I'm not. I don't know where I put them. I wanted to show you those golf shoes.
Oh, didn't you show them to me, or did you just tell me about them? Can't remember.
I think I just told you about them.
Oh, yeah, because there's no heel in them. Yeah.
I got three boxes of Jordans. Like, as a kid, you realize, like, that was the dream? Like, to have multiple Jordans? I got the boxes come in, and I'm just like, I didn't even want to open them. I'm like, Jesus, these are beautiful. So anybody that knows me, last couple of years, I've gotten special shoes for tech. So for next tech, I got these Jordans, right? These are regular like Jordans, and they're orange, and I like, it's the whole orange thing, right? Because the other orange I had was like the the construction orange. But I've also become a big fan, I've been telling John, of these these Jordan golf shoes. And I can't tell if you're supposed to actually wear them to play golf in or not, but this is what they look like. So this is that same shoe, but there's no heel. And if you look at the other side,
I just don't know how that works.
Like, if you look at the other side, it does have some teeth on it. Like, mm-hmm. like I feel like you would actually use that on the golf course, right?
And you said it was marketed as a golf shoe.
It says right there. Oh, yeah, it says golf right there. Yeah, it says golf right there. So, like, I told John, like, I'm not sure if you're supposed to just wear them to the golf course, just put on your other shoes or what. But, like, you know, the other shoes are just like normal basketball shoes. You know, they're just flat. They don't have any teeth or anything on them. These have teeth. And they're not so bad that, like, they feel funny to walk in. They just feel like regular tennis shoes to walk in. But, yeah, I don't know. I want to go to the driving range, try wearing them, and see if I can actually golf in them. Because it's not like you run or anything. But, yeah, there are no laces.
Obviously, you've never played speed golf. I mean, neither have I.
That's true. There are no laces or anything. You just slip them on, slip them off. They're better than flip-flops, man. I was a big flip-flop guy. So yeah, these are great, especially when you're traveling. And well, we don't have to take off our shoes anymore, but if you do have to take off your shoes, you just slip these on and off. They're fantastic. I love these things. They're Jordan golf shoes. So yeah, it even says golf on the tongue. So yeah, they're very cool, but I love, and I did screw up because this one here, the swoosh is orange and the swoosh is black. So but I still got the orange tip. I did, but whatever. Okay. That's it. We're done. Thanks, everybody, for hanging out with us. Appreciate it. Thank you, one of you. Bye.
This has been PHP Bye. Podcast, the official podcast of PHP Architect, the industry's leading tech magazine and publisher focused on PHP and web development. Subscribe today at phparch.com to see what the leaders in the community and industry are talking about.